Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the New York Times, the News and Observer, The Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Entertainment Weekly. Music Review is underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning appointment, please call 919-779-1755. This program is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical, folk, jazz, blues, rock, country, and pop music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. Today's musical trivia questions come to us from the website onthisday.com. Question number one. It was on this very day back in which year that the first country album to ever debut at number one appeared on the Billboard pop chart? Was that back in A, 1937, B, 1951, C, 1977, or D, 1991? So which year did a country album first debut at number one on the Billboard pop charts? And question number two, what did Elton John do on this very day back in 1979? Was it A, he collapsed on stage while performing the song Better Off Dead? Was it B, he released his hit songs Benny and the Jets? Was it C, he mistook Bob Dylan for a gardener and gave him clean clothes at a Stones concert? Or was it D, he was caught on stage during a rainstorm while wearing a Donald Duck costume? Elton John, what did he do today back in 1979? Anyway, the answers to these two important questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. Our transitions come to us from that same website, onthisday.com, and today, quote-unquote, is the weekend of September 26th. Well, it was on this very day, back in 1898, that composer George Gershwin was born in Brooklyn, New York. Two of his many known works include Swanee and Rhapsody in Blue. Gershwin, born today in 1898. And it was today in 1963 that the song She Loves You by the Beatles was played over the radio by Murray the K in New York. It is believed that this was the very first time a Beatles song was ever played in the U.S., and that was 62 years ago today. She Loves You by the Beatles. And in country music news, we have this article titled, Grand Ole Opry Announcement Leaves Country Music Fans Asking, What's Happening? This is written by Isabella Torrigiani and published in Parade Magazine on the 21st of September, 2025. The Grand Ole Opry is often called the heart of country music, and for more than a century, it's lived up to that name. Since its founding in 1925, the iconic Nashville venue has become a rite of passage for country artists and a symbol of tradition. So when the Opry announced that pop star Sabrina Carpenter would be stepping into the circle on October 7th, fans were quick to weigh in. The official announcement came via the Opry's Instagram account on September 19th. Oh boy, at Sabrina Carpenter is making her Opry debut. The two-time Grammy Award-winning global superstar just released her seventh studio album, Man's Best Friend, and we can't wait to welcome her to the Opry stage on October 7th. See you soon, Sabrina. Carpenter, 26, is without a doubt becoming a rising force in pop music. With seven studio albums and multiple chart-topping hits to her name, the former Disney Channel star has built a successful career on her own terms. Still, her name isn't exactly synonymous with country music, and that left some longtime fans conflicted. While some fans praised the move, others expressed confusion, asking questions like, "Okay, love her so much, but why is she at the Opry? And she's pop, not country. What is happening with the Opry?" One comment even called her debut a disgrace to country music. On the flip side, many supporters defended her appearance. Some highlighted that Carpenter has country influences in her sound and has teamed up with a country icon, Dolly Parton, for a version of her signal, "Please, Please, Please." For those fans, her Opry debut feels like less of a stretch than critics are claiming. It's worth mentioning that the Opry has a long history of opening its doors to artists outside traditional country circles. Performers like Paramore, Pharrell Williams, and Steven Tyler have all graced the Opry stage. While the venue honors its roots, it has continued to evolve alongside the changing times and the music that resonates with new generations of fans. That said, there's an important distinction between performing at the Opry and becoming a member. According to the Grand Ole Opry's official website, membership is a major milestone reserved for those who've made contributions to the country music industry. The Opry considers a number of factors for membership, including radio airplay, record sales, and overall impact within the country genre. Carpenter's October performance is a guest appearance, not an induction, which follows a long-standing tradition of the Opry showcasing a wide range of voices without necessarily labeling them as country royalty. Whether you're a die-hard country fan or a newcomer to the genre, one thing's certain: the Opry circle keeps growing, and sometimes that means welcoming artists who bring something a little different to the stage. To some, it feels like a break from tradition, but for others, it's exactly what's kept the Grand Ole Opry alive for over 100 years. And in classical music news, we have this article titled, "U.S. School Cuts Music Lesson Costs by Printing 3D Violins for Students." A staff member has now printed over 200 violins in her office. This is published on the 15th of September, 2025, in ClassicFM.com by Lucy Beach. A U.S. school has started 3D printing violins to provide affordable instruments for low-income students. A superintendent at its school in Pennsylvania began 3D printing violins right from her own office in an effort to reduce costs for families with students interested in playing a musical instrument. Dr. Laura Jacob has been able to produce violins that cost $50, which equates to approximately 36 pounds, and gives them for free to any student in her rural school district in Coal Center, Pennsylvania. Jacob was inspired by a video of the Ottawa Symphony Orchestra, which has experimented with 3D printed instruments, and decided working on something that could bring music to children who otherwise might not be able to afford it. "I started tinkering. I found some models online," Jacob told CBS News. "I'm not a computer scientist or an engineer by any means, but after a variety of failures, I found one that actually printed, and it sounded good. It's a great start for kids." Jacob currently has 30 3D printers inside her office. "We did start with humble beginnings with just two," she said. In the last 5 years, Jacob has printed over 200 violins and even now teaches a weekly 3D violin club where students learn to play the violin and also learn about 3D printing technologies. "It's that moment when you see them smile like that, that smile that comes out as they're starting to play, and they create that sound themselves," Jacob said. Layla Knox, a student in the program, said, "Being part of the club makes me feel powerful because it's just a big group and we can all do it at the same time. It makes me feel more confident in school than I did before," she added. Another student, Evie Dentino, said, "I feel like it makes you a better student because if I can play the violin, I can do anything." Jacob hopes that the program can help provide students with a lifelong love for music, saying, "If that sticks with them, then to me, it's worth it." NCC's I'm Not in Love opens our rock and pop music news. It's an article titled, "This haunting 70s rock love song is still racking up streams 50 years later, and even its co-writers can't believe it." The 1975 soft rock classic got a second life on streaming platforms. This is written by Victoria Miller in Parade magazine on the 18th of September, 2025. In the summer of 1975, a soft rock ballad dominated the charts in both the United States and the UK. The song was 10cc's I'm Not in Love, written by former Neil Sedaka backup band members Eric Stewart and Graham Gouldman. The English rock band enjoyed the success of the breakout hit from their third album, The Original Soundtrack, but never expected it to get as big as it did. While it reached number 2 on the Billboard Hot 100 in July 1975, 50 years later, I'm Not in Love has more than 423 million streams on Spotify alone, A YouTube video of the song has another 48 million views. The song's modern-day boost comes in part from its appearance on the Guardians of the Galaxy soundtrack in 2014 and a cameo in the video game Grand Theft Auto Vice City series. Still, no one expected the song to live as long as it has, not even the co-writers of The Haunting Ballad. In an interview with the Arizona Republic, Gouldman, 79, called the song's ongoing success amazing. I mean, I know when we first recorded it, we knew we had created something special. Let's say that, he added. But we certainly wouldn't have said, this song is still going to be played in 50 years. I don't think any of us realized how commercial it was going to be or even thought about it in those terms. Gouldman noted that the inclusion of the song on the Guardian of the Galaxy soundtrack no doubt helped the song gain a new audience. Gouldman told Songwriting magazine that he knew I'm Not in Love was good, but never thought it would be a huge hit, even when it was first released 50 years ago. We used to turn the lights off in the control room, lie on the floor, and play it back to ourselves. But at no point did any of us say, oh, this could be a massive hit, or anything like that, he said. We just knew we'd done something really, really special. It's a bonus that it became a massive hit. Stewart, 80, also spoke about the song in an interview with Alliance Entertainment. He admitted he did not like an edited version of the 6-minute song that played on the U.S. radio. I thought it was terrible, he said. I can't listen to it. I cringe because it is like asking someone who has written this beautiful concerto or just even a small classical piece, and you chop something out of it and the magic is lost. The continuation and the flow of I'm Not in Love worked so beautifully by accident. We were just experimenting. After I'd mixed it, we sat there for 3 hours listening to it again and again and again and again and saying to each other, what the hell have we created here? This is unique. No one's ever done this before. I'm Not in Love is still a big seller, he added.
Be quiet, big boys don't cry. Big boys don't cry. Big boys don't cry. Big boys don't cry. Big boys don't cry.
One of the most unique parts of I'm Not in Love is the whispers of a woman saying, be quiet. Big boys don't cry. Big boys don't cry. Big boys don't cry. Those words were recorded by a receptionist at the group's recording studio, Strawberry Studios in Stockport, England. In an interview for BBC Radio's Two Piano Room, receptionist Kathy Redfern revealed that she walked in on the recording session to deliver a message to the band and was recruited to deliver those lines featured in the middle of the song. I immediately said, no way, she recalled, I can't sing. The 10cc's guitarist put me over his shoulder, carried me back to the studio. Kevin Godley came into the studio with me and would tap me on the shoulder when they wanted me to speak. I managed to do it around 3 to 4 takes. While she was nervous about the musical debut, Redfern said, it's a fabulous song. I never get tired of hearing it, even now. It just stops you in your tracks. Really, I never thought I would be hearing it 50 years later.
It's just a silly face I'm going through. Just because I call you up. Don't get me wrong, don't think you got
So, welcome to fall. As we leave summer behind, well, at least in the northern hemisphere anyway, on September 22nd, we're left with the question, what was the song of summer for 2025?
Trees swaying in the summer breeze, showing off their silver leaves as we walked by. Soft kisses on a summer's day.
Chad and Jeremy's A Summer Song introduces this final music article for today. It's titled, There May Not Be a Song of the Summer, But There's Certainly a Sound. This is written by Jason Lalegi, August the 9th, 2025, and Axios. As Google Trends data suggests, people aren't necessarily rallying around a particular song of the summer this year, as they have in the past. If last summer's boasted an abundance of refrains, this summer is all crickets, data suggests. Unless you're on TikTok. Even if there's not a song of this summer, there's certainly a sound.
Wish you didn't have to go. No, 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 no. And when the rain beats against my window pane, think of summer days again and dream of you.
A 2024 ad from British budget airline Jet2.com went mega viral on TikTok and has soundtracked at least 2.2 million videos on the platform. The jingle features Jess Glynn's 2015 song, Hold My Hand. Most of the videos using that audio depict something gone haywire, a flooded subway car, a log through a windshield, holidays straight from the Final Destination universe. If Song of the Universe or Song of the Summer is a numbers game this year, it's an open and shut case, with the title going to Alex Warren's Ordinary, which just topped the Billboard's Hot 100 chart for its ninth non-consecutive week. Some argue, however, that there are other less quantifiable criteria that define a zeitgeist-dominating tune. Last year's Brat Summer, for instance, and Kate Bush's Running Up That Hill, and even Megan Thee Stallion's Hot Girl Summer might qualify for the title. So, how'd you do on today's trivia questions? Well, the answer to our first question, it was on this very day back in which year that the first country album to ever debut at number one appeared on the Billboard Pop Chart. Was that back in A, 1937, B, 1951, C, 1977, or D, 1991? Correct answer? Answer D, 1991. So, not really that long ago. As noted in OnThisDay.com, it was today, back in 1991, that the Garth Brooks album, Roping the Wind, became the first country album to ever debut at number one on the Billboard Pop Chart. GarthBrooks.com adds that Roping the Wind, RIAA certified for sales of over 14 million units, was the first album in history to debut at number one on both the Billboard 200 Top Albums chart and the Billboard Country Albums chart. It also earned Garth his first Grammy Award in 1992 for Best Male Country Vocal Performance. The album included the number one singles, Shameless, The River, and What's She Doin' Now. Roping the Wind quickly rewrote music history and became Garth's second album to sell more than 10 million copies. Also, three albums by Brooks, Roping the Wind, No Fences, and Garth Brooks, occupied the number one, number two, and number 3 slots on Billboard's Top Country Albums chart for 11 consecutive weeks in 1992. This was an unprecedented achievement that has yet to be repeated. And the answer to our second question, what did Elton John do on this very day back in 1979? Was it A, collapsed on stage while performing the song Better Off Dead, B, released his first hit, Benny and the Jets, C, mistook Bob Dylan for a gardener and gave him clean clothes at a Stones concert, or D, was caught on stage during a rainstorm while wearing a Donald Duck costume? Well, it turns out he actually did each and every one of these unusual things. But on this particular day in 1979, Elton John collapsed on stage while performing Better Off Dead at the Universal Amphitheater. After a 10-minute delay, John returned and completed the concert. He was suffering from exhaustion brought on by the flu. Correct answer, therefore, is answer A, collapsing while performing Better Off Dead. So let's close out today's program with a cover of a popular song that was released on this very day back in 1958. Here's Dolly Parton, Emmylou Harris, and Linda Ronstadt's cover of To Know Him Is to Love Him, a song composed by 18-year-old Phil Spector and released by the Teddy Bears today, back in 1958. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Music Review. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. This program's also available as a podcast after the broadcast in our website, ncreadingservice.org. As we leave you now, remember these words: kindness is the language which blind people see and deaf people hear. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. If you have a suggestion for music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me at 919-832-5138. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Music Review, underwritten by Bill McClure. Tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning, please call 919-779-1755. So long, until next time.